Blog Talk Radio.
Fashion sort of run of music for the those of you who like a few years. Hello and welcome to a team of voices, open poetry with me, AP Taylor. I've dragged a couple of people along just to keep me company, and they are none other than the person who keeps us all together in a team of voices. That is Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And we have none other than Jay Hatter. Hi, Hatter. How are you?
I'm just fine, AP. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, we've rocked out the old music there, Hatter. That's sort of a throwback to almost 4 years ago.
Yeah, it is.
From the past.
Good to hear it.
There you go. It's been a long time since we've rocked out Ivor Davies on Ice House. But anyway, I thought we'd put on the list. Why not, as they say in the classics.
Yeah.
We've got a list of poems to go through today. Open theme. So we've just got stuff on the board to work our way through, and we'll see who calls and who doesn't, Deb. And those people who have sent in SoundClouds, we'll certainly get through those. And we've got a series of those. I think we've got Buddha and Gerald Green and Silver Poet. Then we've got some stuff on the board by yourself, Deb, and I imagine Hatter and I get ourselves organized. And
I'm looking.
Something on the floor. Yeah. So that's the way it works.
Actually, the one I put on the board is from Alf. I'm still looking through mine, too.
That's all good. So if that's the case, Deb, you know, we've got a little bit of time today. We don't have to rush through things. And so I thought it's a perfectly good time to do one of the bigger poems.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, and you know, there's lots of big poems and lots of small poems, and the bigger poems often are from older people because that's just the way it works. And you know, one of those older people from 1893 in the Sydney Mail is, of course, the one and only A.B. Patterson. I didn't read any of his the other day, so I'm going to do one today. And it's my second favourite A.B. Patterson poem, Hatter, Black Swans. And it goes a little bit like this. As I lie at rest on a patch of clover in the Western Park when the day is done, I watch as the wild black swans fly over with their phalanx turned to the sinking sun. And I hear the clang of their leader crying to a lagging mate in the rearward flying. And they fade away in the darkness dying, where the stars are mustering one by one. Oh, you wild black swans, 'twere a world of wonder for a while to join in your westward flight, with the stars above and the dim earth under, through the cooling air of the glorious night. As we swept along and our pinions winging, we should catch the chime of a church bell ringing, or the distant note of a torrent singing, or the far-off flash of a station light. From the northern lakes where the reeds and rushes, where the hills are clothed with a purple haze, where the bellbirds chime with song of thrushes, make music sweet in the jungle maze. They will hold their course to the westward ever till they reach the banks of the old grey river, where the waters wash and the reed beds quiver in the burning heat of the summer days. O ye strange wild birds, will ye bear a greeting to the folk that live in that western land? Then for every sweep of your pinions beating, ye shall bear a wish to the sunburnt band, to the stalwart men who are stoutly fighting with the heat and drought and the dust storm smiting, yet whose life hour somehow has a strange inviting, whom amongst the work they have put their hand. Facing it yet, O my friend stout-hearted, what does it matter for rain or shine? For the hopes deferred and the gains departed, nothing could conquer that heart of thine. And thy health and strength are beyond confessing as the only joys that are worth possessing. May the days to come be as rich in blessing as the days we spent in the old Lang Syne. I would fain go back to the old grey river, to the old bush days when our hearts were light. But alas, those days, they have fled forever. They are like the swans that are swept from sight. And I know full well that the strangest faces would meet us now in our dearest places, for our day is dead and has left no traces. But the thoughts that live in my mind tonight. There are folk long dead and our hearts would sicken. We would grieve for them with a bitter pain. If the past could live and the dead could quicken, we then might turn to that life again. But on lonely nights we would hear them calling, we should hear their steps on the pathways falling, we should load the life with a hate appalling, in our lonely rides by the ridge and plain. In the silent park is the scent of clover, and the distant roar of the town is dead, and I hear once more as the swans fly over, their far-off clamour from overhead. They are flying west by the instinct guided, and for man likewise, is his fate decided, and griefs apportioned and joys divided by a mighty power.
Awesome poem.
Who was that? Who was that?
That was Banjo.
Oh, Banjo.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, you go Banjo. You know, go
Banjo. Man.
Bring up big thumbs.
This is something that when you somebody calls themselves a poet, you go show them this and have them reevaluate themselves if they are or not, because this is beautiful.
God, I love it.
It is.
It totally is,
but I'm thinking I was giggling at the reevaluate themselves. Everybody can't be Banjo.
it's an honest evaluation, you know? One day.
Yeah, well, look, you know, we can't all end up on the Australian $10 banknote, Hatter. That's where he is.
Yeah.
So he obviously did. And
very familiar. Everything he does is familiar.
He's just got a he has a beautiful lexicon. He expresses things beautifully, but and he writes brilliantly because that's what he does. But he also has also in his palms a brilliant internal rhythm. And
yeah,
if it
is
changes,
that what it is, the rhythm.
It's the rhythm. I think. And you sort of you write a lot of poems, and you occasionally, you know, well, I occasionally, very occasionally, get that sort of rhythm. So
now, how would that? Did they have in 1892? Did they have? Was he able to write in newspapers? Regular.
Yeah. They were regular newspapers. Yeah, that was in the Sydney Mail. So
okay.
In the newspaper. Yeah. So
yeah.
Without
the internet or TV or radio yet, read that and finding that and read, I can imagine it being a sort of a big thing, part of the day.
Absolutely, it was. And of course, they had poets back then. Of course, had readings, you know, like in town halls and stuff. It was an interesting era. And certainly, you know, it in many ways a lot simpler than today, of course.
Yeah, they call it the gay 90s, and I think it's the Pollyanna era.
Yeah.
Everything was good, you know.
Yeah, you're right. So I hadn't chosen a poem to read, Hatter, but now that we talk about rhythm and cadence and all that stuff, I'll read one of mine is a short form, but is my favourite cadence poem. So Deb will know which one this is because she knows all of my stuff. This is Way Under Mushrooms, and it goes a little bit like this. Waters bubble in worn sandstone burl, way under mushrooms and caverns they twirl, distant from swept grasses, dainty as spring, skipping girl, into cave's echo they sing. Rivulets rumble in wide chambers curl, sediment stone people, pale orange pearl. Over years find an audience and galleries ring, lazy waters unfurl, among limestone they sing. Waves collapse upon sandbanks swirl, deep below broad cliffs currents they hurl. River and seas they gather, join a wellspring, into current swirl. As waves surge they sing. End poem.
You're right. Okay, this is perfect. And this is a good example of you reading your own stuff, because you knew how to run through those lines. Instead of pausing, you know, the little nuances that are there can't be traded or given to another reader. I mean, it's the emotion, and like I said, reading cold, it's very hard to do.
I mean, really, really good poets, you pick up a rhythm and a flow, but that's still takes a little bit of time, whereas if you read it yourself, you've got that benefit of knowing what you're trying to do, you know.
Just the whispers. I tried doing that, lowering my voice and whispering at times to emphasize a pause, you know.
Yes.
I'm lucky to get that out of my own.
This was a good one to pull out after reading Banjo, though.
Yeah, that's true. Good. All right. I haven't found one yet for mine, but I'm going to go find one. Let's see.
Yeah, it's an example. You know, obviously, Banjo's doing it on a wider scale with a bigger line length, and he's using 14 syllables.
Longer stanza line, but that bow is still there.
As I said, you know, of all of my poems, I just think that's got the, it just hits the right words and the right syllables. And it's strange, you know, I've written a lot of poems, you know, one in a thousand you actually get to work that way. For me, it is.
You know, I saved one of Banjo's pieces. You want to read another one by him? I posted it up.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. This one I liked.
Okay. Well, this is from Jay Hatter, of course, and it's a short poem for Banjo, so which is always intriguing. So it's only about five stanzas. This is "As Long as Your Eyes Are Blue," and it goes a bit like this. "Will thou love me, sweet, when my hair is grey and my cheeks shall have lost their hue? When the charms of youth shall have passed away, will your love as old prove true? For the looks may change and the heart may range and the love be no longer fond. Wilt thou love with truth in the years of youth and away to the years beyond? I love you, sweet, for your locks of brown, the blush on your cheek that lies. But I love you most, the kindly heart that I see in your sweet blue eyes. The eyes are signs of the soul within, of the heart that is real and true. And mine own sweetheart, I shall love you still, just as long as your eyes are blue. For the locks may bleach and the cheeks of peach may be reft of their golden hue. But mine own sweetheart, I shall love you still, just as long as your eyes are blue." End poem.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you know, I remember that one.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones I pulled out when we were doing the birthday special for AP, and everybody was picking a Banjo poem to read to him from my list, and you chose this one, Heather.
I love this one. It's got the inner line rhyme that I invented.
It does.
Yep.
And it's got the
well, to me, I did. I didn't know.
It was pretty good using it back in 1864. If you invented
it,
I don't know how he did it.
I remember the day that I started that and went, man, that sounds good. It's got a good rhythm. It's got a good cadence to it. Man, put that inner rhyme in. Man, I was proud of myself. Look at this. And I'm like, oh, man, people have been doing that for hundreds of years. God, that's stupid.
Well, yeah, but, you know, what do they say? Everything old is new again, Hatter. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? So... But I do love the use of eyes in that poem. It's really cool. Yeah, just the there's something about eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, you can use it in every genre. You can do it to spook somebody out through your eyes. Love somebody dearly, you know, as long as your eyes are blue.
Yep.
So yeah, the eyes are a constant. Yeah. Very good.
I agree. I pick up the eyes too. It's funny, I was writing a bit of my book that I'm doing and I was talking about eyes and cows and how to work out whether they're upset or not, and just to look at their eyes, you see.
Now, do you worry about the proper the pronouns? You try minimizing when you write. I don't notice that you do at all, but
no, I don't.
I'm wondering if you
there's tool that says, particularly some of the sort of grammar editing websites had up, that pronouns are a bad thing. And that they're wrong and awful, and that you should minimise them or get rid of them completely. I sort of don't follow that pattern. I just sort of go with what flows.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, I've never noticed that you did, but you're right. That was one of the rules that when I went and researched how to become a better writer, a better poet, that was one of the top ones was minimize your pronouns. And if you do it, and it's amazing. You count somebody's pronouns. They'll have 16, 17, and it's just, you know, five stanzas. So, but and if you want it to be personal, go ahead and use them. Definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
To keep the reader.
I think you have to decide who you're writing for, don't you? Yeah, and you go through. I've gone through several phases. I've been using a sort of grammar sort of checker that said don't do this, and I've gone through, you know, looking at the ranking thing to see if I want to use that, and at the end of the day, I really just sort of threw them all away at the end of the day and just said, well, look, if I'm happy with something, I'm happy with it, and if I'm not happy with it, I'm not. And now it took a little to get to that, but. And maybe along the way I did need some of those supports to help me, but I've got to the point now where I'm sort of big and ugly and yucky enough that if I don't like it, I'd say I don't like it. You know.
Yeah, being your worst critic, that can backfire on you. With me, it's like I rarely will post something I'm not happy with totally, but there are times that I do. And I apologize for that.
No. Well, I think we've all written things that we aren't very happy with. I was going to, because Marius Alexander is on the board, I was going to read his poem next, Hatter. He sent us in a poem of his, and it's... the good news is it's a form poem, Adam, which is always something I enjoy. So this is a rondo, and it is up on the board now. It's called Friendship is Love, and it goes a little bit like this. Friendship is love without a doubt, that feeling you cannot live without. A shelter in the fiercest storm, the blanket that will keep you warm, some tears, some laughs. A song, a shout. Two friends who help each other out, for trust is what friendship's about. A friend will never do you harm. Friendship is love. If your new life's a total rout, and when you feel that you're all out, when you might lose your smile, your charm, a friend will always lift your arm. Good friends spread their true love throughout. Friendship is love. In pong.
Beautiful.
Back when the word friend meant something, when a handshake was a contract, both parties lived up to it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? I really love the form, Marius. I really like that you used the structure. It's a really old structure, really old structure, a 13th century structure from the French. Quite a specific, you know, set of rhyme and syllables. And so it actually makes it really tough to actually go and tell a story in the way that you have. And I think that's good. And particularly... I found the poem quite touching as a poem to get this form, which is difficult to do. So, Deb, what did you think?
Well, that was part of what I was going to say. He kept the emotion going even through trying to pull the scheme, the form. If your new life's a total rout, and when you feel that you're allowed, when you might lose your smile, your charm, a friend will always lift your arm. And you think about that, and it's not really the same as it used to be, and it's more of a rarity to find someone that awesome, that dependable, that supportive. And that's a sad thing. I'm blessed. I have some amazing people in my life, but it just makes me think that, you know, of all the people that just don't care. And I think that's a beautiful, beautiful share.
Yeah. A friend is somebody who worries about you. How are you doing?
Yeah.
And we'll do something to change that if it's not acceptable. Without
how can I help? How can I make you
provoking.
Smile? Not how can I make it worse?
Yeah, my best friend Brian, he moved away, and I have not had a friend like that since. Brian was just like a friend to the definition of it, man. I mean, this guy did everything for me when I needed it. I didn't have to ask. And I did for him as much as possible.
Yeah.
But he was a self-made man, and that's how he lived his life. I'm glad to be his friend.
Yeah, look, it's interesting, isn't it? I think the sense here that friendship is love is just a beautiful thought, really. And so I just love that whole. I mean, I love the use of the rondo because I think it's really cool. But putting that to one side, the sense of that comes through the poem all the way, which is just it's lovely.
Very well done. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's always tough, as I said, to do those form poems. They're not easy because you've got to have the rhymes, you've got to have the structure, you've got to have something worth repeating.
I do like the structure. I do like the structure. Yeah.
Oh.
You read it beautifully, too, in the AP. You read it just right. That's...
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Good way.
Good poetry is easy to read, Hannah. So, you know.
Okay.
I'm going to have you read all mine.
No. You're not doing that. You don't get out of that easily. Okay. We have a couple of... poems with SoundCloud. So I was going to do one of those next. And maybe we will do the Gerald Green one because Gerald's always interesting and enlightening and a heck of a good poet too. So let me put that on the board. Thank you to Marius for your lovely comment. We will put Gerald's poem link on the board, and then we will play his clip with you now.
Have you noticed that Western culture is on a collision course with food? We eat more. We enjoy it more. Fast food has become the norm. And as we eat and eat and overeat, our weight keeps gaining and our health declines. I've written a poem this morning called Good Eats. I love to eat food in the morning with overnight hunger pangs forming. An urge to ingest right after my rest that hits me without any warning. I'm careful to hydrate at breakfast, reminding me it's not a contest, but sugar-free meal to help how I feel, avoiding all food that's been processed. At lunchtime, I eat my filling, a wonderful time that is thrilling. I eat what I need with moderate speed, while munching and crunching and swilling. At dinner time, I am most careful, avoiding fast food that is harmful. I eat with the goal of portion control, consuming what's healthy and useful. I never eat stuff that is greasy or heavy things that make me queasy, like salads and greens, tomatoes and beans, avoiding junk food that's too easy. My food has no father or mother. When harvested, it doesn't suffer. I love eggs and cheese and flavors that please, with spices that work undercover. I need no pain pills or antacids. Am careful about drinking fluids. With plenty of rest, my diet works best, controlling my blood cells and lipids. Consuming good food is a pleasure that brings family members together while eating a meal with zest and appeal. It brings happiness without measure. End poem.
We'll see. There you go.
Wow.
And it was in little refrains, Hatter.
It's limericks. They're limericks.
That's what they were.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right. Now, I have to point out a couple of changes between what Gerald actually said and what he wrote. So, Gerald, I was watching. The first was in my favorite, my food has no father or mother, rather than my favorite food has no mother. So he put his father in the third to last stanza. But more importantly, Gerald, and I was listening, the poem says, I seldom eat stuff that is greasy, and you said, I never eat stuff that is greasy. That is a significant difference. I just want to point that out. Significant difference between the written
and
the
word. Oh, there it is. So it's stuff is.
Just show it.
Hey, that's honesty. Be honest.
Probably. Hatter, what do you think of Gerald's poem? Limericks.
Yeah, everybody gets this. The inner rhyme limerick scheme is, I love that. I think it's easiest to write, easiest to read. This is perfectly done. The mother, my food has no mother. Now he's talking about process. He's talking about things that don't have faces.
Yes.
I hate that term.
Yes.
But that's what they go by. I can't find it. It was one where he says the spices. When I was in a pain clinic, it was in a vegetarian hospital, and all they had was tofu and cheese. Thank you. It was that bad. But they did have a couple of things that you could add the right spices to. It was actually wonderful to eat. Yeah.
Yes.
Spices is very important.
And No, absolutely right. I can still remember, actually, right back when, this was years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when I first went over to the US, and my ex was with me, and she was vegetarian, yeah? And I still remember her pain when she got an entree on a US plane. It was half a lettuce, a small little lettuce cut, like that, it's green. And things have moved on a long way.
Say that again. I missed it.
She got half a lettuce for an entree. A little lettuce.
She ate half a lettuce? Oh, yeah?
She only got it. Well, that was her entree. Yeah, that's true. Anyway, there you go. On the plane. So I still remember it.
Was she one that bugged you because you weren't a vegetarian?
I wasn't a vegetarian, so she was stealing my food.
No, I know, but did she constantly remind you that you weren't?
She did. At the time, I was feeling something about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what it's like.
Yep.
I do. What did you think of Gerald's limericks and poem?
Oh, I thought this one was a really fun one, and I see he won a gold medal for it, too. It's easy to see why. He put such a whimsiness into it with the different pieces. I found myself giggling more than once. And I did also notice the little faux pas there with the greasy food. And my favorite food has no mother. When harvested, it doesn't suffer. And it made me think of people that won't eat meat, has no mother, you know, the vegetarian. But then there's eggs and cheese and flavors that please with spices that work undercover. It was just really, really clever. And at the end, consuming good food is pleasure that brings family members together. While eating a meal with zest and appeal, it brings happiness without measure. And it's funny because they say that is why the world's becoming a bit overweight, because we pull so much joy and happiness from food, rather than it being a necessity that we need to survive by having some of. It's turned into this, you know, total joy fest for happiness without measure. So I got a kick out of the poem. I thought he did great.
He did do really well. He did do really well. But he does really well all the time, Deb. He has a skill with words, and He's a beautiful reader of his words too. I just love his little pauses and stops, and he's a what I call a classic reader of poetry. You know, he's just really lovely. So the nuances are beautiful. Okie doke. Yeah. Talking about somebody who's into nuances and somebody who can write a poem, I was very Alf and I.
Okay.
Okay. Can you still hear me, Deb?
Sound fine now. Yeah.
Better now.
Okay. It might have just been a passing satellite or something. So I have a piece up on the board by Alf Collier, who writes a heck of a lot of stuff. He really does. He's just a poet who can spin out poem after poem, and he does it with amazing style. So this is the Roger Brown Mystery.
Does he dream in rhyme?
I must guess, but here we go. It's the Roger Brown Mystery by Alf Collier, and it goes a little bit in long form too, Hattie. It's like a 14-14 type poem, and it goes a little bit like this. On Highway 27, 18 miles beyond the town, no cars were at the fuel pump. The attendant wore a frown. Outside, the fog was thickening and the lights wore smoky sheaves. And further out at Tarmac's edge, the fog laid graying wreaths. He moved beside the window to decipher what he saw, but nothing moved about the yard in fear, a lowered jaw. His breath was cast upon the panes that sheltered him inside, but though he heard a vehicle, no auto had he spied. A hose was taken from the pump and settled in the place. A car might be if someone fueled, but he saw empty space. Then footsteps sounded in the gloom. The bucket and the rag were taken from the storage shelf and washed with swift zigzag. No water dribbled from the cloth. No windscreen had appeared. The clerk felt stunned at witnessing this sight was something weird. A frantic face turned to the road, but headlights never gleamed. His courage failed. He tried to think, then screamed as he blasphemed. Next morning, sunrise floated on the blackened, burned-out shell. The young man's body never found was rumoured sent to hell. Explosion of the station lacked the element of sound, and no one knew the place had spewed its wreckage on the ground. Conjecture of the happening bred gossip in the town, an empty coffin buried, but they'd not found Roger Brown. But on that highway late at night, a teenage boy oft seen, outside the place, the building that the station once had been. End poem.
Wow. Okay. Gas station horror. Write a poem for contest.
Yes.
Gas station horror. That was the prompt. That was pretty good.
The pump filling up a car that's not there, and the guy getting blown a bitch. It's really cool.
Yeah, you got an honorable mention. I wonder what the winners were, because this is very well done.
I don't know what's going on. I've got to tell you, that one's
really quite cool. Yeah, the Ghost Rider needs gas too, right?
Yeah.
Then he blew it up.
Yeah.
That blew me away. When he blew it up, he blew the thing up.
Yeah, blew it up.
Man. Roger Brown. I love it when they throw a name in there.
Yeah.
He just hit an empty copper beer over there. I'm Roger Brown. Yeah. You should put down a true story.
I haven't read the other poems clearly in the competition, had I? But can I tell you, I think he was stiff. I think he was very stiff. Anyway, that's okay. That's just me. I think he was stiff.
I have to find one.
It's a hell of a decent poem. And as normal, you know, if I tried to write something like that on that theme, Alpha at me for tea, breakfast, and grilled dinner. Dad, what did you think? What did you think of this poem?
Well, I think that if he didn't pull some of this from the news or something, I'm blown away, period. But it just feels like it's recalling something that he knew about, like this was a real story from the past, details that pulled you in. The next morning, sunrise floated on the blackened, burnout shell. The young man's body, never found, was rumored sent to hell. I mean, his rhyme, his story, and I agree. I can't even imagine how this was topped for it to be an honorable mention rather than a gold, because, I mean, it's fabulous. I really enjoyed it. And on a side note, Alf, when you're listening, don't forget to update me when you get home. Stay well. Feel better. Thanks for sending in the poem.
Yeah.
Great read, AP.
Yeah.
Pleasure. Alf hopefully is seeing a fair bit of sun up his way and a little bit less rain than it's been up there recently. But it's always a pleasure to read Alf. And some of the rhymes, you know, are just, you know, gleams blasphemed. Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Blasphemed. What a great rhyme. Yeah.
Yes, a master poet, man. When they get poetry. Remember Rhyma-Rhyma?
Oh, I do remember Rhyma-Rhyma.
Absolutely.
I do.
He always blew me away with his long line rhyming. He would go basically two of these long lines and end up rhyming it. And he didn't have a regular speaking voice or one that you would want him speaking voice, but he read his own work. It was amazing. He got it.
But Alf's been writing for a lot of years, and his rhyme and rhythm is impeccable. So always a pleasure to read you, Alf. Now, Hatter, we have come to your piece on the board. I know that you've put it up there. Now, are you going to read this one?
No, I'll try. This is the tribute to John Coe. This is the tribute to a poet that's passed. It needs to be read. Yeah. A tribute to a poet that's no longer with us. I went to his vault and entered the contest to in tribute to John Coe. I didn't know him personally, basically rarely chatted, but we were in the same contest for years.
Absolutely.
So we had the same friends, you know, same groups.
Yeah.
And he wrote this, piece called Paper Words, or Paper Words was in the piece. And I thought that was a great line. So I titled it With Paper Words, with John Coe. It goes like this. Aligned in rows and accounted third, he write his tales with paper words. An empty place shall always read his ink, he rhymed in poetry. To follow a flight, behold the crow in memory of a poet, I know. A poet's room is ne'er what it seems, treasures abound when a poet dreams. Games that played in golden and stone garden rows, the name remains John Victor Coe. 100 times in 1,000 ways, a dreamer of dreams, I rest today. Sleep well, my friend, and never last. We shall meet again when I shall pass. To follow by flight home, behold the crow, in memory of a poet I know.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, John Coe, the poet.
Yeah. That's a lovely person.
I should have had you read it.
It's just a lovely
person.
Go ahead. Yeah, please do.
Oh, I can't.
Please do.
I can read it. You read it actually very well, Hatter, but I will read it.
Thank you.
So let me, here we go, try this. Aligned in rows, accounted third, we write his tale with paper words. An empty place shall always read, he inked his rhymed in poetry. To follow by light, behold the crow in memory of a poet I know. A poet's room is ne'er what it seems, treasures abound when a poet dreams. Games that played in stone glass rows, the name remains John Victor Coe. 100 times in 1,000 ways, a dreamer of dreams now rest today. Sleep well, my friend, in everlast, and we shall meet again when I shall pass. To follow by flight, behold the crow, in memory of a poet I know. In poem.
Beautiful. Better when you read it.
Ah, oh, it's different, Adam. You know, I'll stop in different places and you'll stop in other places. You know, it's just different. So, Deb. Did you want to talk about Hatter's piece for John?
Yeah, I remember when you wrote this, Hatter, and you were concerned because, like, you didn't really know him, like you had said a few minutes ago. But for me, it was like you touched on it from the one poet to the other perspective and did it so flawlessly that, you know, they awarded you gold for this. And I mean, it's, of course, a well-deserved gold. But there was the sentiment, like the games that played in Stone Garden Rose, the name remains John Victor Coe. I mean, just the flow, the everything. But I think there was, it was like that second couplet, an empty place shall always read his ink, he rhymed in poetry. It was a tribute that was, you know, that's the word I used, sublime. It was a really, really great one.
Yeah, it just got what it picks up is just that lovely feel and respect for words, Hatter. And there's something quite lovely about that. Writing poems for people and in respect to people is really tough. You tend to want to put everything in, but I think you kept it really simple, and I think that was the pleasure of the poem. It was the simplicity of the poem.
Unmuted. I was sitting there talking to nobody. Deborah was right. I think you did remember I was concerned about that. Being that he had some really close friends here, and I wasn't one of them. I was worried. I don't know why I was worried. I shouldn't have been. But
ah, no, no, think so. Mm. I mean, the interesting thing is often the closer I am to somebody, the harder I find to write the poem.
That's true. My memory of John Coe from the day I got here and understood the contests, if I saw John Coe's name in there, I knew I had to write something good. I knew something. That didn't make me leave. It made me, I knew I was going to have to write something as good, if not better than John Coe. And it was probably 75%, maybe 50% of all the contests I've entered, John was in it.
Yeah.
He was one that I gauged my abilities. I wanted to be better. You know, it's like playing pool. My dad said when I started playing pool, he says, always play somebody a bit better than you. Don't sit there and play guys that can't and then in your league. And I do the same thing writing. I want to have John Coe there to be an opponent because he writes so well, you know. And I think I might have learned a lot from him. Whatever you learned from writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and his cat.
Interestingly. Yeah. That's right. Interestingly, I think the first ever gold medal I got on the site was awarded to me by John Coe.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Wow. So, and that was for a poem, you know, way back in, might have been 2015 sometime, but it was a long time ago. And I'm not even sure I've kept it because it was such a sort of silly poem because it was about the United Nations banning the use of a letter.
So what? Banning the use of what?
They decided to simplify the world by banning a letter. I can't even remember which one it was, but it might have been F or something. Yeah. No, seriously, that's what it was about. So, 2014. There you go. It was a strange poem, but it won a gold. So anyway, there you go.
Poor Fred
knows where it is now. But anyway, we remember John and we remember all of those poets who've sadly passed from the site in the last year, and unfortunately, it's been far too many. So, anyways. So, going back to the real life and going back to our friends who are around us, Hannah, I was going to go and play.
I was just looking on his page. He ran 1,698 contests and had been a member since 2014. That's a lot of contests. Wow.
A lot of contests. Yep, absolutely. So we will turn from John to one of our good friends and one of our friends who has been with us for a little while. And I should say, Phil the Poet joined us for our Melbourne Cup sweep and got third, Adam, which he was quite excited about.
He got third.
The Melbourne Cup was our most listened to episode in a while, Sam.
Well, it worked really well, apart from the fact that I couldn't actually work out who the horse was that was winning because their bloody saddle cloth folded over. Apart from that, it was really good. I got really happy, except for the call of the cup. I didn't work out who won until I crossed the line. The flap thing, the bloody horse thing went back. Anyway. But apart from that, it's good fun. And I should have said Lockdown Larks got last, officially last too, Hatter. We didn't work that out until about 45 minutes after the race, but we got through that too. So that's good fun.
That's fun.
Yeah. So we go to Phil the Poet and his poem, which we've put up on the board, and that is, just make sure I've got this. Thanks for the flowers, but I'm not dead yet. Got to be a story. and we're playing the poem now.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Thanks for the Flowers, but I'm not dead yet. a bouquet of flowers tied to a barbed wire fence. Everyone is talking about me in the past tense. Oh, mother, why do you cry? Why do you fret? Thanks for the flowers, but I'm not dead yet. Tears fall down on sad, swollen faces, coming together in catalytic embraces. Oh, brother, why do you cry? Why do you regret? Thanks for the eulogy, but I'm not dead yet. The mantra of, I can't believe he's gone, fills the room, adding sourness and bitterness to the gloom. Oh, sweetheart, why do you cry? Why are you upset? Thanks for your tears, but I'm not dead yet. Disillusionment and disbelief fills the air. Mournful cries come from blank stares. Oh, princess, why do you cry? I've paid my debt. Thanks for the joy, but I'm not dead yet. Old friends and acquaintances offer comfort with reassuring words of he didn't suffer. Oh, my friends, why do you cry? Did you forget? Thanks for the tributes, but I'm not dead yet. End poem.
Okay. Yeah. I went to my 10th or 15th reunion, and I was greeted with by a lot of people going, I thought you were dead. There was a rumor going around that the accident I was in, I didn't make it. Yeah, I was dead.
Yeah, right.
Quite a few people thought I was. It was weird.
Right.
This brought it back.
Yeah, right. Well, there you go. That's certainly one sort of interpretation of it. Kill the poet. Any space.
Oh, I really, really thought this was fantastic. And the little, the last line, thanks for the flowers, thanks for the eulogy, thanks for your tears, thanks for the joy, thanks for the tributes, but I'm not dead yet. It was just, each time he would say, but I'm not dead yet, it cracked me up. But very, very, from the first stanza, a bouquet of flowers tied to a fence. Everyone is talking about me in past tense. Oh, mother, why do you cry? Why do you fret? Thanks for the flowers, but I'm not dead yet. It's just, I thought it was very, very cool. It's a couple years old, I'm noticing too, but yeah, no, there was it was a really fun share, and I bet he had fun writing it. Thanks for the giggles.
Yeah, it's sort of the masterpiece in British understatement. You know, the Brits love a little bit of understatement. This is one of those. It's classic piece in that way. So there you go. So well done, as always. Thank you for dropping something by and for supporting the shows. It's always appreciated. Now, I have got the next poem that I have to read because it's by the said last place winner. This is the link between the last two. We had the third place winner in the Melbourne Cup show. Now we've got the last place winner in the Melbourne Cup show, which was Lockdown Larks. And he actually wrote a poem about being last in the Melbourne Cup, which is kind of fun. But this is not the one on that. This is another one. And this one's a little different because it is a musical prompt, and this one is called Stand and Abide, and it's by Lockdown Larks, and it goes a little bit like this. And so to our vow, would you stand with me now, fight tooth and nail that we shall not fail. We can be strong right as we long. No need to hide if together we abide. Can you hear destiny's tune, the dearth happening soon? The sphere cannot cope, overburdened with our hope. And so to our vow, will you stand with me now, find tooth and nail that we shall not fail. The tempest will rage, heralding the new age, or wanting the same from the resource game. Who will love and who will take, fighting for our children's sake? So much denying, is it too late? Only crying beyond the garden gate. And so to our vow, will you stand with me now, fight tooth and nail, that we shall not fail? We can be strong, right every wrong, no need to hide, together we abide. Stand with me now. Stand with me now. End poem.
Wow.
What did you think of this one by Lockdown Love?
I like his rhyme in here. And the title, Stand and Abide, I like that. But where was that? The tempest will rage, heralding the new age, wanting the same from the resource game. And the other one, we can be strong, right every wrong, no need to hide if together we abide. There's a nice message wrapped in his rhyme. I thought he did a really great job with it. Great read, too.
Hatta, what did you think of this one?
Unmuted. I don't know what's happening. Was there a lot of noise on my end, Deb? Or...
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, because I'm sitting here alone in the kitchen. I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, but your new, I think your new stuff picks up everything, because I think I even heard a piece of paper.
Wow, okay. Let me do this.
What do you think, Hatta? I wonder if you're still with us. Hatta? We've got...
I think he's on two yeah, I had to hang up because one phone died and pick up the other,
yes,
but he's on like two lines.
He seems to be. Hatta, are you with us? No, he's not.
He's not them both. Maybe he'll die. Yeah, maybe he'll come back.
Yeah. Because I actually, for some reason, I thought this was a bigger piece about sort of climate change. Because I know there's talks happening in Egypt, I think, of all places, for the United Nations for the upcoming round of agreements. I think COP27, from memory, if I've got it right. Hatta, what did you think of this piece by Lockdown Larks?
Yeah, I read the prompt, what it was written for. I'll never get over what we said. I think it was in my head. I always remember what we knew 100% to be true. That's a hard one to write to. I think he did a good job. Who will love and who will take? I'm missing what the regret is. What ways? Where is that? Fighting for children's sake. Because it's the regret of the being a parasite on this planet, maybe. That we talk about, I talk about a lot.
Yeah, maybe.
And an apology.
Yes. So, okie doke. Well, thank you again to Lockdown Larks for supporting us. Now, Deb, I might get you to put your piece up and read next, I think.
I can do that. Grabbing it, Deb.
Deb, when were the write out, the Florida contest? When is that? Is it going to be back in March or April?
April.
Okay.
So I debated between a rhyming poem and the most recent free verse I wrote, and I went and got the rhyming one anyway because there was sentiment, and there seemed to be quite a bit of sentiment flowing through tonight. Okay, so this is ready, Hatter?
Yeah, yeah.
Called Fresh Mowed Grass makes me think of my grandpa. There we go. As ivy vines crawl the rock wall on the borders, cirrus wisps cover the cornflower sky. Those clouds look like white dove feathers spreading on the sky as they float up high. Mowed grass cologne fills the barnyard air, cooling as fall slips into color the views, marking the leaves on the treetop canopies, adding topaz and garnet and jasper hues. Grandma's carving pumpkins in the kitchen and cooking tenderloin in the big crock pot. And she rings the bell announcing dinner. The table is full, but the head chair is not. Tonight we eat without my grandfather. He's now in the realm of forget-me-not. But we toast to him with sweet apple cider, served with cinnamon sticks and piping hot. End quote.
That's very nice. It's very nice. It's got all the colours, but it's got the smells and it's got the feel. And I love the fact that the grasses remind you of it. There's something very distinctive about smells and they're very vivid and very strong. And I just love how that's described there. So I really like that.
Thank you so much.
Hatter, what did you
ask? Yeah, you're right. Smells are the most, they bring on the most vivid, nostalgic feelings and memories, the smell
mm-hmm.
of things. And that makes sense because it's closer to the brain, I mean, sight and touch and taste, you know. But it is, they say the smell is the strongest. Yeah, I got that too, the cinnamon sticks. What got me was no one sitting at the head of the table. Where was that? Yeah, the table was full, but the head chair is not. Oh, man, I'm just lumping my throat after that. Glad you were reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Grandpa.
I did too, Hatter. Thank you.
Welcome.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice, Ted. Really liked it. And it was a good choice, I think, for the sort of flow of poems that we've had today. Really, really cool. And now, for some reason, absolutely everything here of mine has jammed. I can't do anything. I can't move anything.
Okay, let's see. You have three left, JCA, Budos, and Crystal.
Yep. Okay, we probably should, and JCA said he might ring and so did Crystal, didn't she? Yeah?
Yeah, now I would think that Jay, if he was going to call, would have been right around now because I believe when he's at work, he gets midnight. Not sure what's up with Crystal, but she may have fallen asleep. And Budos is a song.
Well, I was thinking we might finish with Budos one. Maybe what we do is that we get, I've got it on the mobile now, I might put JCA's on board, Deb, and read that. And if he does call, we'll get him to read it himself. But with only the three to go, we're probably not going to be around for too much longer. So that was my thinking.
Yeah, it sounds perfect. I guess the same with Crystal.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if we do JCA's and I read it, and we do Crystal when you read it, and then we finish with Budo, yeah? 15 minutes away, but I think that's about right. So if JCA does call, we'll get him to to read this again, but this is In His Absence, There's a Heaven Above You by JCA, and it goes a little bit like this. Saline cyclone swirl and the cappuccino eyes that plant the plastic flowers next to the chiseled granite pill stones. Satin knees stain the manicured soil as the smoky quartz clouds smother the amber glow sun. Soft whispers and the grasping vows dig for the screenshot face set below the crumbled autumn leaves. My head is a stone in the coffee ground substrate, singing with the silent owls and the black beetles. Breezes flit your eardrums with my bass baritone soundings as the rain taps your silken neck and your kiss floats through the gravel sand. Lift your guarded eyes as my mist feathers your orchid cheek, sky. I love you. Don't cry. End poem.
Mm. Sadness. Kiss sadness. Sad. Makes you sad. Gravel sand. Kiss close to the gravel sand. That's a nice line. As the rain taps your silken neck and your kiss floats through gravel sand.
Well, that's beautifully written. Give him that.
I wanted it to rhyme so bad.
Ah, bad luck about that. No.
I did. I just wanted it to rhyme.
No. Well, it didn't, but it was had beautiful flow. Deb, did you want to say a few words about JCA space?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite Guns N' Roses songs, actually. And he poured the sentiment in quite well. Soft whispers. Big vows dig for a screenshot face set below the crumbled autumn leaves. Breezes fill your eardrums with my brass baritone soundings as the rain taps your silken neck. But I think it's the wrap up in his ending there. Stars float in the midnight sky. I love you. Don't cry. It's got the same feel as he closes it out as the song does, you know. Don't you cry tonight, I still love you. So, I mean, I think he did a really great job, not just in expressing the sentiment, but in a fine tribute to the original song. Great share.
Yeah, I missed that completely. Well done, Beth. Yep, great comment. And Hatter, did you want to say anything more, or if you...
It takes a lot to draw up that sadness in me, and this did.
Yeah.
And when I say I wanted it to rhyme, it's not bad. I'm not criticizing anything. It's just stuck in my head that way.
You
did a good job bringing it up.
Yeah, no, it was brilliantly written. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you for putting it in, and we hope still to hear from you, but if we don't, we're in good form. So what we're now going to do, Deb, is that we're going to grab Crystal's piece and put that on the board, and I was going to get you to read that, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So that's up on the board now.
Got it. Oh, cool picture.
Okay, dokie. Let's see here. Crystal Hope. Her poem is called Sunlight Walks on Pumpkin Cobblestone. And here we go. Apricot roses blossom on pumpkin bushes. Her hazel eyes water the plant like lace cushions. Her brown boots clank on the brick cobblestones. Her ears whistle to winds brushing at her headphones. Murky walls flushed her billowy blouse. Raindrops plunder on oval edges soaked and doused. Marshmallow branches dabbed cotton on her cheeks as her blurriness blinked to sunlight peak. End poem.
Intriguing little image, but it's a cute little poem. Very colourful, very well read, Deb, by the way. Enjoyed that. The clanking on the brick cobblestones and the heat whistling. It's lovely sounds of that scene. Hatter, what did you think?
Yeah, Marshmallow Branches. Somebody had to make sure I don't think she's talking about me. Think? Oh, Marshmallow Branches. Crystal has a way of. It's almost like Pretty Bird. I'm lost the words here. Hold on. Brown boots. Now, who's she talking about?
I think she's describing in that image. I think.
All in the image. That is cool. All.
Yeah.
Crack like lace cushions, her brown boots clack, her ears whistles, murky walls, main box stuff. Well done. I mean, I'm sort of trying to put it together here. So it's fantastic. Marshmallow branches. 60 words in the picture. Okay. Nature hope.
Yep.
But see, there's not a word bank here. She did very good. Murky walls flushed her big blouse. A little billowy. New word.
No, I agree, Hatter. I think she did a great job with the piece.
Tremendous.
I really enjoyed it. I thought, really, not a lot of words, but beautifully put together. So thank you, Crystal. And thank you, Deb, for working.
My pleasure. I think it felt reflective. I kind of feel like the her in the brown boots was Crystal, but I mean, could be wrong. But it felt.
Yeah. I agree. Last piece, and that's by Budo. So I was going to put that up on the wall and then play that. But before we do that, I guess we should. Oh, and JCO came up and said, thanks for reading. Well, there you go. So you just missed us, JCO. Just. Not by much, but just. We've got this one last one to do. I was going to ask you, Deb, to talk about the shows coming up before we do that.
Aha. Well, I think that tomorrow happens to be Saturday, which means we are talking about clay.
We are talking about clay, correct.
Wherever that might take us. And I can't wait to see. I've been trying to write to that one, and it keeps taking me to a place that should be on Sunday. So I'm working on it. but in the meantime, after that show, on Monday night, we have the personal prompt show with the amazing autumn scenes bursting with color. Take them anywhere you want, just make them color filled. And on Tuesday, I do believe that unless a couple complications arise, that my suite is going to tackle her Stephen King show that she could look forward to doing. So that ought to be, and if she's able to pull it together, that will be Tuesday night at 10 o'clock. And then other than that, I have Crystal, and I don't see what she has for her topic yet, but she always comes up with something fun or cool or and then that's the next couple of days at a glance.
Perfect. Okay. Yep, that's planned. So me, and thank you to all the good folk who put up open poetry for us to read. Much appreciated. And we will play Budo, and then we'll be back to close up.
Down in the middle of it, tied to the middle of it. I can't break myself free. You'll see. The dark night closes in like a good friend, and it tells me goodbye. Lost inside is me. You'll see. Drowned in the middle of it, I can't breathe easily. You'll see. Dark night closes in like a good friend and tells me goodbye.
It feels like a great place to end, doesn't it, really, when Udo puts the lyrics together and talks about goodbye. It sort of all comes into a nice place and closes all up with a little pink bow. Deb, did you want to say a few words about Udo's piece?
I did. I thought that it was a tender tribute to the poet that was lost. I didn't know Banjo Lynn, but I know that she had a lot of fans, and that she'll be very missed by all of them. And the sad tenderness of the goodbye showed in his words as he was singing there. Always
great.
Hard to lose a friend. Great tribute.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Ted. And Hatta.
This was to Banjo Lynn?
Yes.
Yes.
I didn't know that when it was being read, and what I got was like the chapters of your life. For example, when I was able to live up with the rich and famous around the lake community, when I left, just like when I left Chicken Mountain, it's a chapter of your life, and it always waves goodbye. You know, you're not going to see those people again. That chapter's done.
Yeah.
And that's what I got from it, and I didn't know it was for Badge Lynn. Wow. Very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but lovely, lovely words. As always, beautifully sung, and nice place to finish. So thank you to Budo for putting that with us. So we will finish things up there, Deb and Hatta, and we will be back, the three of us, for the wonderful world of clay tomorrow. So until then, have a great evening, and we will be talking to you tomorrow.
Great show, guys.
Love them. Okay. Thanks. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Yep.
Okay.